fantastic.
So Mark Hirschfeld and I recorded one, I guess it's last Sunday, so about 6 days ago, and went over a few different things. Kind of got back in the swing of posting a podcast, recording one, and getting it uploaded for you guys to listen to, and was able to round up Jansen and Nate and get our schedules to align for a little bit this evening and see, you know, pick their brains and see what 2020's got in store for them. So without further ado, we're going to jump on into it. We'll start out. Mark and I talked about our bow setups a little bit on the last episode, so I'm going to open it up with that. Jansen, if you want to go first, tell me a little bit about your setup, what bow you're shooting, rest, sight, arrow setup, broadheads, you name it. Give us a quick rundown.
I am currently shooting the Matthews Verdix, 29.5-inch draw, 70 pounds. My arrows are the Beeman ICS Pro Hunters 340 spine. I'm using Rage Hypodermics this year, 100 grain. And I've already shot one deer this year so far with them. I liked how it performs. Shooting probably better with this bow than I ever have. Seems to get the job done for sure. I have trophy, or no, I don't. I have IQ bow sights this year. That's what came on my bow. I bought it used. Guy just bought it and decided to get the crossbow out, and I was lucky enough to be the first person he messaged to see if I was interested and picked it up for a great price. So it's got some good accessories on it. It's got a vapor trail, limb-driven drop-away rest, which I was skeptical about after seeing how it was set up. But after shooting tons of arrows through it without a malfunction, it seems to do the trick. And that's my setup. I'm excited. I got opportunity to shoot a lot of animals with it this year, hopefully, Lord willing. So we'll see how it performs. And I plan on keeping this one for a while. Everyone makes fun of me because I seem to get a different bow. I'm not really one to get the newest, greatest technology out every year, but I always end up getting rid of my bow and giving someone a good deal and picking something up a month before the next season starts and going from there. But I think I'm going to keep my hands on this one for a couple years at least.
I'm the same way. I switch about as often as I switch vehicles. Seems like I buy a new bow every year, and I'm like you. I'm not buying the brand new model for the year. I'm always a couple years behind just for
me too. Me too. We go to that ATA show and we shoot the best bows there and have it in our mind what we're going to try to buy, and then we don't do it.
So, Nate, tell us a little bit about your setup. I know you and I have been working on it a little bit, and I think you're pretty much good to go after the last couple of days. But give us a rundown of your setup and what you're going to be shooting for 2020.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way as you guys. I get rid of one and get another one. I go back from crossbow to compound, and I did the same this year after, like Jansen said, we went to ATA, and that just made me fall back in love with compound archery, and I shot several different brands, several different big names, and loved them all, but I just went back to the Athens and come home and got on Archery Talk and found a Athens Solus. I think it's a 2015 model. It's hard for me to find a bow that I like because I'm left-handed and they don't make as many options as they do for a right-handed guy. So I hunted this one down and I got a really good deal on it. It was a bear bow, and I'd actually sold my Diamond Infinite Edge to another guy, and he upgraded all the sights and rest and stuff off of it. So I got my old sights back and my old rest. I think it's an Apex sight and Octane Whisker Biscuit looking rest, which I really like. I'm kind of jealous of Jansen getting the Vapor Trail because I want to try that. I have several buddies that shoot that and they really like it. But as far as the specs on it, it's a 27-inch draw. I got short arms, and I think it's set about 60 pounds right now just till I can get back into repetitive shooting and getting my muscle memory back up. And as far as arrows, I'm shooting the Black Eagle Outlaws. Actually just got them in the mail the other day. Thanks, Ryan, for ordering those for me. And they're 300 spine, I believe. And all I got to do now is get her sighted in and get some shots under my belt and climb a tree and see what we can do with it.
And what broadheads are you shooting?
Oh, sorry, I think we're the NAP kill zones, 100 grain.
Yeah, I think we're shooting the same thing. So.
That's a killer head, my friends. That's a killer head.
Couldn't beat them. Me and Ryan found them at Walmart last year, wasn't it, Ryan, or earlier this year for like $20.
Yeah, they had them on sale. I guess Walmart was getting rid of what they had in stock from last year. And I want to say we got them for like $16 a pack. Maybe. I bought several packs.
Yeah, you bought more than I did. I should have bought two, but I bought
now, only do, one. Do yours have the trophy tip on them?
Mine do.
I like that.
They're the same thing that Ryan got. So, yeah, they got the trophy
tip. Yeah, I like the trophy tip. And
me as well. I think it performs a little better if you hit a bone, maybe mess your shot placement, hit that shoulder. I think you stand a better chance with that. The head kind of reminds me of a tip of a Muzzie or something like that.
Yeah.
They're mean looking for sure. I can't wait to.
Oh, when you shoot a deer with it, you'll definitely know. You'll be hooked.
That kind of brings up a good topic. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it because we got several things we want to cover. But Jansen and I were talking on the phone just for a few minutes earlier, and you bring up broadheads and you bring up the trophy tip that's on the kill zone. But something that seems to be taking the hunting industry by storm, is the way I like to put it, is heavy arrows. FOC and using outserts and using a 125 or 150 or sometimes even 200 grain heads, getting a lot of weight up front. Jansen, we'll start with you again. I know you've got some opinions on it. What I know you had mentioned maybe trying it in the future. Just give me a little quick rundown on your thoughts on it.
I think next year I'm going to go with that. Just I've noticed – And what made me notice this, I was watching an episode from the Hunting Public, and they said, you know, they've went from Thunderheads back in the old days to, you know, different expandable broadheads, and then now they've switched back to this. They've noticed that when they switch to an expandable broadhead, you know, they're making good shots, and you're getting your good blood trails and wound channels and stuff like that, but you don't have near as much kinetic energy to completely pass through the animal. And obviously, if you're shooting an animal, it's ideal to pass completely through it. Just so nothing plugs that, you know, you don't have nothing on the other end plugging that hole or whatnot. So I think it just makes sense that, you know, if you're comfortable with your shot placement, you really don't need a broadhead that makes it look like you shot the deer with a battle axe and put a 4-inch hole in its side. You know, if you're comfortable enough, I would rather sacrifice that crazy blood trail. But it's not as forgiving if you don't hit exactly where you're aiming, which, as bow hunters know, you don't always make the perfect shot. And sometimes those big expandables will help you when you make a terrible shot, and it'll save you from losing a deer. But on the other hand, you know, I've seen them quartering away and you put it right in that pocket and it deflect and you lose an animal. So I think I'm going to switch to something a little heavier on the front end and some cut on contact broadhead next year. I'm going to play around with it and see, but I'm not against either. I like the science behind it. I hate to say that, but it makes sense. I mean, I'm pretty sure everyone bow hunting started out with probably a wasp, thunderhead, or a muzzy, and we never had no complaints. And I love my NAP kill zones. My rage have done the trick. We've shot a lot of broadheads, but I don't know. I like that, you know, I like the theory behind that with more impact and get bigger pass-throughs or more pass-throughs than you would with a expandable broadhead. And then you always have the chance of a malfunction, which you're not going to have to worry about whether or not your blades are going to open up on impact. if you don't have any blades to open up. Right. So we'll see. I'm going to experiment with it. It's a little too late. I'm already in the tree now hunting, so I'm not going to do any big changes now. I think what I have will work just fine. But next year, I'm going to start a little earlier and play around with a couple different things. I know Cameron, he's a big believer in that, and he's using outserts and a real thin spined arrow, and he seems to like it real well. But I know they're expensive.
Yeah, and that's me, really. In the off season, I plan to sit down and do more research on it. Like you say, I'm too far in already now to do it this year, but I really want to get in there and do some learning and research, and then I'm going to consider it. Nate, I don't know how much you've read or done research about it. Yeah, I don't know, you know, your level of knowledge on it. It may be closer to mine as far as I haven't done a whole lot of research, but any opinion from you on the whole heavy arrow setup?
I mean, not really. I'm still kind of, for lack of a better word, a bow hunting virgin. I've only killed a doe, and that was with a muzzy and a hand-me-down bow 3 or 4 years ago. So I've always been more of a long gun type hunter, but I'm excited to get back in and try new things and do my own research.
And I think it's one thing I love about our whole team personally is, you know, we have different levels of, you know, we've got different levels of experience, not only in hunting in general, but different types of hunting, different types of setups. Like Nate probably has a whole lot more experience with crossbows, hunting with crossbows than anybody else. And Jansen has more experience with hunting, you know, the Midwest than anybody else. And we're very versatile, I think. And I really like that. So it's not a knock that you don't know as much or haven't that much experience with bow hunting. I think that's a good thing. But.
Right.
Absolutely.
So moving on. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
All right. I said I'm always excited to learn something new and something to better myself and make myself more versatile and give me myself more options.
Absolutely. That's the name of the game. You can never know too much and you'll never stop learning. I probably learned more last year in my 10-day vacation about bow hunting than I've learned the past 5 years prior to that. You never stop learning. The more time you spend in the tree, you're always going to learn something every time you're in the tree.
And the good side to it is not only are you learning, but you get a longer season if you participate in all the other seasons as well, not just gun season like I used to do.
Absolutely.
That's actually a good transition point into the thing I wanted to talk about next. You talk about doing things that extend your season, whether it be, you know, bow hunting, black powder, whatever the case may be. Jansen, I'm going to turn to you because you're the only one that really has anything input on this. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing right now in West Virginia.
Here in Parkersburg, I don't live in Parkersburg anymore, but I live about 30 minutes from there. This is my third year doing their annual urban deer hunt. You have to apply for the hunt. They give 30 permits out a year. And usually it's just a little 94-acre plot of land in the middle of town. It's got some good deer on it, but, you know, 94 acres, 30 people bow hunting. You can pretty much wave at each other sitting in the deer stand. So this year they started a new thing where if you got a permission slip that they provided for you and you had a landowner that had 3 acres or more property, you could get their permission and take it to the city of Parkersburg and they have to approve the property and then you're good to hunt that. So this is my third year doing it. I've killed a doe each year, but last year, I don't know if you followed the show, you probably heard, but I had a 14 point velvet buck because the season starts September 7th and it doesn't end until December 31st. So you get a lot of time to hunt under your belt, but the rule is you have to kill a doe before you kill your first buck. So I just got some good footage of it and couldn't do anything else. But that deer is still alive. thank God. But I spent 2 full days. I left work, started knocking on doors with Cameron, and we struck out, man. I don't know how many doors we knocked on, but we had some leads, some people that said maybe, you know, give us a chance to think it over. So we left them with the paperwork. And, you know, it's not like walking up to your everyday farmer out some country back road. I mean, these are people in town. They're not used to seeing deer hunters. So you can't really go there in your, I mean, it sounds terrible to act like someone you're not, but, you know, I've watched a lot of Sequon and suburban bow hunting. You know, you want to wear nice clothes. So that's what we did. And we presented ourselves nice and gave them our spiel and told them everything. And we just didn't have no luck. So the next day I spent hours on the phone, you know, with my hunt stand app, looking at pieces of property that would qualify for me to hunt, Googling names of businesses and everything you could possibly think of. And finally, my last phone call, I kept it for last because there was probably zero chance of me getting permission to hunt it. It's 100 acres in the city limits, which is very rare. And he said yes. He called another gentleman, and they had like a board of directors for this piece of property, and he had to get permission from all of them. He made those phone calls, and thank the good Lord above, he called me back and said everyone approved of it. So I got my permission slip mailed out, and he mailed it back, and here I am. So now I'm fortunate enough to hunt some great deer on 100 acres where really don't have anyone to worry about as far as a deer going and dying in someone's yard. So it's urban deer hunting, but it's probably the biggest piece of property I could have landed in the suburbs of the town I'm from. So I lucked out there. And like I said, season's September 7th to December 31st. So you go all the way from where they still got some velvet on their horns to the end of the regular bow season. So immediately I hit the ground running, put some trail cameras out and hung some tree stands, and it's going to be a good year. I'll leave it at that. And I'm still trying to gain access to other pieces of property. You know, there's some giant deer running around in town, but where they're at is not going to be easy to score a piece of property. Trust me, if there's a 3-acre piece of property in the city of Parkersburg, I've been on the phone with the owner, or either that or knocked on their door. So, but I'm not giving up. But yeah, that's my input on urban deer hunting. It's definitely different, but it's super exciting. These deer, they aren't stupid. I mean, you would think you could just feed them by hand, but it ain't like that. But you know, they don't expect you to be in a tree, is what I'm saying. They're used to seeing people. They're used to smelling human scent. So you got that going for you. But I mean, I'm sure if they bust you in the tree stand, they're going to come in looking up at you every time. But tonight I had, it was in the 20s of deer, you know, 15 yards or closer, and never got busted one time. Just never seen anything I really wanted to use a tag on. You get a lot of tags and they don't count towards your season bag limit. So I can kill 2 bucks in there and 5 does and pretty much free of charge. If urban deer hunting is something in your town, you may want to check it out, because you'd be very surprised at the amount of deer running around in the city limits and the quality of deer. Cause you know, these things can establish an age structure where no one's really hunting and no one's really pressuring them other than, you know, getting hit by a car. That's their only fear, or that's their only, you know, thing that could possibly take them out. So I'm excited. You're definitely going to see a lot of urban footage from me if you follow along with the show this year. But I know I rambled for 10 whole minutes, but
no, that's fine.
There's a lot of stuff I could talk about, man. There's some deer that we've been watching for years, and finally we got a chance to go after them. So And the good thing about urban deer hunting is you can hop out of your stand and walk a couple hundred yards and go eat Chick-fil-A breakfast.
Can't beat that.
That's awesome. And you've already got your doe out of the way, right?
Yeah, I was fortunate enough last Sunday to get my doe out of the way so I don't have to worry about seeing a big buck like that again and not being able to pull my bow back.
Good.
I'm ready to go. I'm just waiting on the right deer.
We have an urban archery in North Carolina, but it's a little different than what you're talking about. Like, we don't have to draw or anything, but it's only for towns that are participating. And here where Nate and I both live, there's not really – the next county over has a town or two that participates, right. But I've never really
– Now, do you have to live in that town to be able to qualify for it or no?
No, you just have to have permission from a landowner. There's no public land in either, you know, that's, you know, in any of the towns that are participating.
Because we're like that as well. We have several towns in West Virginia that do it. And I have some buddies down the southern part of our state that have already been successful. As a matter of fact, a good buddy of mine just killed a 151-inch velvet 10-point there 3 or 4 days ago in Charleston, West Virginia, which is our capital of our state. So there's a lot. I mean, in Parkersburg, there's another urban zone that's just for a big housing development, but it's a little different. You have to have someone like sponsor you that lives there, and you can only hunt like their backyard. So pretty much a waste of time for that, but it's a cool experience. It's definitely fun to be able to get out in the woods a little earlier than usual and have a chance at a velvet buck. I could have killed a velvet 8-point tonight, but just wasn't the right one.
Ours is a little different too. Like, our regular season comes in the second Saturday in September every year. So our urban is actually on the back end. Our rifle season, or our whole season, runs to January 1st. And then the urban archery would start January 1st and run all the way to like the second week in February, I think.
Right. I think Parkersburg's doing that this year too. They're doing a late season sometime in January. I think it's only 2 weeks long, but I'm gonna rot in a tree in the suburbs this year, because why not? I mean, you're hunting good age structured bucks and putting meat in the freezer. I plan on donating some deer this year because, me, like I said, Cameron, who's also a part of this, he drew a tag as well. So that's 14 deer between the two of us. And then the rules say if you want to kill any deer past that, you have to check them in on your regular license. So we can kill a bunch of deer and we eat a lot of deer meat, but at the same time, we're helping, you know, the town reduce on car accidents and people's being able to plant gardens in their yard in town. On the other hand, you know, we're feeding people that don't have the means to go out and kill their own meat or the money to go grocery shopping. So we plan on donating a lot of deer this year, and you know, that's just more footage for us and more time in the outdoors, which is what we all love to do. So
absolutely,
we're excited.
And you mentioned the Seek One guys. They've been very successful at it in Atlanta and now Nashville and several different places. And just to throw them a plug, I don't really know them personally at all.
They're unreal. They are unreal. I messaged Troy, which is one of their main guys. They're good Christian guys, and they've definitely got it figured out. And they'll give you the time of day to talk to them. They're not too famous to not care about your average Joe. I mean, they're really open to teaching you more about urban hunting. So I kind of reach out to them and was kind of picking their brain on some things. But yeah, there's a lot of people doing it nowadays.
Yeah, so moving on to our next topic, I'm going to pose a question for the two of you that Mark and I answered last week. Nate, we'll start with you on this one. For 2020, the remainder of the year, and deer season specifically, obviously, what are you most excited about, whether it be trying, or what are you most excited about for this season?
Well, I mean, my season's going to look a little different. I've got a newborn son here at home, and I haven't got a lot of prep time in because he was in the hospital for 28 days in the NICU, but we're home now, thank the Lord, and getting that straightened out. But I'm excited just to be out trying new things. Like I said, trying to get better at bow hunting and try to really concentrate on taking a good trophy with whether it be a big doe or a nice buck with my bow, and running, getting some more footage and learning more about running the cameras, and because I'm still kind of fresh to all of it, and I've got a couple new ideas up my sleeve that I want to try this year, and just getting out and having a good time in the creation that the Lord's gave us to be a part of, and to be out, just go out and maybe not even harvest, but just go out and sit in my stand and worship the Creator, and that He's given me the opportunity to get out and hunt.
Absolutely. And Jansen, same question. What are you most excited for this season?
Most excited for, well, this urban hunt's got me excited. So I'm going to focus on that until probably mid-October, you know, when bucks start changing gears more towards rut. And then I have a vacation, as you well know, Ryan, scheduled where you're going to come for the third year in a row and stay with me here in West Virginia, and we're going to hunt a high big bucks I'm off for 10 days. I don't know how many days you plan on staying, 6 or 7, but I'm pretty amped about that. Last year, Ryan came in, and we was dealt some unfortunate cards there in the middle of the trip, but I was fortunate enough to have one more day to hunt after he left and ended up filling a tag while I think he was still on his way home and in West Virginia.
I was, unfortunately.
Which is sad, very sad, and it frustrated me because I'd much rather seen him put his tag around that deer. But, yeah, the vacation for sure. And, you know, this year is different for me as well. I don't have a newborn. I do have 2 kids and a new job that requires me to work a little more. But usually I'm putting out a ton of cameras and all kinds of stuff. But I've laid kind of low. I've focused more towards getting really good at shooting my bow, focusing on picking up some urban properties. And I don't feel like it's necessary for me to spend $1,000 on corn and put out 10 cameras. I've done that in the past, and you know, haven't been really successful. Yeah, you'll get a bunch of pictures, but yeah, I just feel like everyone is looking forward to that 14-day period in the rut. So I think this year I'm just going to go off my knowledge of last year and do some hanging hunts in the rut. I have some spots picked out. I got a lease in Ohio now with Cameron, and we've been putting some work in on that property. So continuing to do that and prep for the rut and the vacation that me and you got planned, and urban hunt. That's my goal. I'm gonna rot in the tree stand until closer to that mid to late October, and then probably transition to Ohio. And hopefully I already got a couple bucks under my belt for the urban hunt and buy a lot of arrows. That's what I'm gonna have to do.
That's right. That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll wrap it up. I don't know exactly how long into this thing we are. I guess 30 minutes or more, but we'll end it off with a random question that I had wrote down while you were talking earlier about not getting busted. We'll start with you, Jansen. What are you doing for scent control? I know in today's world, there are tons of options, whether it be ozone or some type of scent killer or scent crushers, bags, the totes. I mean, there's so many different options out there nowadays. The ozonics units, just so many different options there. Tell us what you're doing, scent control regiment, if it's anything super special, not special at all, just play the wind. You know, tell us what you're doing.
It's not really special. I haven't dabbled into the ozone side of things. Just I I'm going to. I don't know if I'll go the Azonix route, but I do. I would like to have one of them scent crusher bags and just a place to keep your clothes. Because I made the mistake of at the new house. You know, I work in the natural gas industry, so I come home smelling like natural gas and throw my clothes in the closet. I made the mistake of having my hunting clothes there as well. But man, I don't know if you guys have heard of it, which you went to the ATA, so I'm sure you have, but ElemaShield has a fantastic line of products. I'm 100% believer in that. I've been taking my scent-free showers, washing my clothes in ElemaShield, and then when I get out of my truck, I get dressed, and every bit of skin that is exposed outside of my hunting clothes, my face and my hands, I just use their ElemaShield core body foam, and that's it. I mean, I haven't sprayed down. I haven't checked the wind. The wind was good tonight. I checked it when I got to the stand, but, you know, depending on where I'm hunting and what I'm hunting, I'm not really playing the wind too much right now, this early in the year. And with it being, like I said, in the urban area, I'm not as concerned or cautious about it. But ElemaShield is really all I'm using at the moment. I'm getting ready to buy their field spray as well. And something special about their products is it lasts. It's not just spray it on at the truck, and then by the time you get to the stand, you already stink and you're sweating this time of year, so you have to spray down again. It lasts so long. It's really a one-time use for that entire day. And, it made a believer out of me. I met the guys at the ATA show and got to talking to them. And that's what I've been using. I'll continue to use it throughout the season and keep everyone posted on it. But definitely a great company. They started in the medical industry, and as a matter of fact, they still are. But they decided to dabble in the hunting industry, and they took it over. I mean, everyone loves it. So I'm going to use that, and I probably will get a scent crusher closet or an ozone machine just to keep my clothes away from everything else that would – any outside scents or anything like that. But I just wash my clothes in a ElemaShield, hang them out in the sun, let them dry, and keep them in a little duffel bag. And I just wear my regular street clothes to the stand or to the farm I'm hunting, get dressed in the field, and put some core body foam on my hands and my face, and I'm good to go. And I've this is my second hunt of the year. I haven't been picked off yet or busted. And like I said, I had 20 some different deer within 15 yards tonight, and never even raised their head. So could it be because it was urban and they're used to smelling humans? It very well could be, but I don't know. That's what I'm using. I'm going to stick to that for now and see how that plays out this season.
Okay. Nate, tell us about what you're doing for scent control or scent regimen, and I'll close this out with what I'm doing.
All right. Mainly, I'm kind of like Jansen. I just wash them in, I hate to say it, but whatever's on sale at Walmart most of the time, and then hang them out, or I either put them in a bag. I used to have a dry bag that I used for all my stuff, and I'd put the dead downwind dryer sheets in there, and keeps the smell on them. But I'm still toying with what one I want to go with primarily. I've used several different ones last year. Obviously, if I named the name, you'd know what we used, because we both use the same thing, Ryan. But I think this year I may try either the dead end game calls odor zone, or maybe even the ElemaShield. It sounds, and from what I've seen, it looks like it works, and we've got a good testimonial there. But I'm the same as Jansen. I really don't play the wind that much unless I know I'm going to be out kind of in the open area where I'm not kind of high up and enough to where I don't think I've not been seen yet, other than maybe last year once. But I'm a big guy, so I'm going to sweat either way, so I got to find something that will mask that, and if I go hunting with Ryan anywhere, he makes me walk, so I'm going to be nasty time I get there. So I hate to be the guy that says whatever, you know, but I'm still toying around with whatever works best. I'll buy two or three different bottles of stuff a year and just try to figure out which one works the best for me and my situations. And I guess that's like with anything hunting, like we were talking about the bows and the different scenarios and things, you just got to experiment till you find what works for you. And that's the joy of spending money on one thing that may not work and then turn around and have to buy something else that you think will work till you find the right one. But that's all in the game of hunting. That's a price you pay, literally. So
I love it. I love
toys. Ain't nothing wrong with that, man. Old Fred Bear hunted in blue jeans and a flannel shirt. He did exactly. Just fine.
Yeah, I was just watching a hunting public video the other day. I can't remember if it was Ted or one of the other ones. I can't remember his name, but they were doing like Walmart bow challenges.
Yeah.
He went and bought like a $300 setup at Walmart and took it to his pro shop and had it set up and then goes out and kills a pretty good sized doe sitting on a 5-gallon bucket in a flannel shirt and bibbed overalls. So it's whatever works for you and however, I mean, you gotta know your area enough to know what you can get away with and what you can't get away with.
And that, so I am trying something different this year when it comes to scent elimination or my little scent regimen that I, you know, use. So Nate kind of mentioned them. Dead End Game Calls has their Odor Zone scent elimination spray. Jansen, I can't remember if you were with me.
Oh, I remember. I know exactly what you're going to say with the Axe body spray.
Yeah, so the guys at Dead End had little bathroom cups at their booth, and they were taking Axe body spray, and they were spraying it directly into the cup, and then they were sticking their hand out and letting you smell the cup, so you could obviously get an overwhelmingly strong smell of the Axe body spray. And then they were taking one squirt of their Odor Zone scent elimination spray, spraying it into the cup right on top of the Axe, and then sticking their hand back out with the cup and letting you smell it. And it was amazing.
It was unbelievable. I've never
seen it.
No, it was the Dixie Deer Classic, I believe is where it was. Isn't that right, Jensen?
Yeah, that's right.
I gotcha.
It's been a couple years ago. It was the first time we ever met in person, I think. But no, it is phenomenal. So
it made a believer out of me.
Yeah, I've got it.
You've seen Axe, which I don't use Axe. I don't know anybody who does or would.
Not since 2005.
Yeah, but that stuff is potent. So if you can kill that smell, you know, I'm sure it can handle the gas you get on your boots or your hands when you forget to fuel up before you have to go hunting and you're stuck in your full camo having to fill your truck up with gas before you head to the woods. I mean, that's good stuff. So I may have to get a bottle of that myself, Ryan.
I've got some of it on the way, and I also went ahead and got some of their body wash and shampoo all in one.
Especially, I still got your body wash.
I was going to say, especially since I bought some from Atsco, if any of you guys are familiar with it. They make the UV brightener killer or whatever, but I had some body wash and shampoo, and I took it to your house 2 years ago, and I leave it there every year.
It's still here.
Every time I take a shower in West Virginia, I know I have soap ready for me.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's going to wrap it up for this episode, and I'm glad we got together and got our schedules to meet and at least toss around some thoughts and ideas. Folks, if you'll continue to follow us along on Facebook and YouTube, and we plan on continuing recording as many of these as we can. We're trying to get back in the swing of it. You know, we took an extended break. I think the last one we recorded before last week's was in 2018. So we're trying to get this podcast thing going. I really enjoy it a lot. I can talk hunting for hours and hours on end. And
yep.
I think y'all can too. So it's just enjoying to sit down with you guys and talk about, you know, different things to do with the hunting industry and hunting in general. But coming up, we're going to have a episode on all things saddle hunting. it's going to be nothing but saddle hunting. Definitely going to have Mark on it, and I don't know who else if we can get you to where
I can. I can put in a little bit of input. I don't know much about it.
And maybe have you on there so you can ask some questions. And
yes, I'm interested in that. Next year, I will be in a saddle. I already got it in the works.
Well, good deal. And so be looking for that. We're hoping to have it recorded here soon. I'm also going to be filming over the next week or two a saddle 101 top series for our YouTube channel, starting with the very, very basics, going over terminology and stuff like that at the beginning, and then kind of working our way up to a full-blown saddle setup and that sort of thing. That's one of the things when I first started getting into saddle hunting, which was, you know, this past over the off season. At first, like, the terminology and stuff was overwhelming for me. I was completely lost about a lot of it, honestly. And I really want to, you know, make something to put on YouTube that people can go and look at and learn at the very basic level from the ground up. So we'll start working on that. So look for that coming out soon and check back for more podcasts. Remember, you can get our podcast on YouTube, on our YouTube page, Bible Belt Outdoors, but you can also find it if you'll search 20 Feet Closer on any of your podcast apps, whether it be Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, pretty much anywhere you listen to your podcast at, you can get it at. So just search 20 Feet Closer there and you'll be able to find us. So thank you, fellas, for getting in with me tonight, and I appreciate taking a little bit of your time and spending it talking some deer hunting with me.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Ryan.
Glad to do it.
All right. Well, until next time, we will see you later.